beginning on the top of Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph Mishnah Gimel, the Mishnayot here are describing the Ulam and the Heichal, the structure. We already noted that it was 100 Amah by 100 Amah by 100 Amah. The Mishnayot will eventually get to the description of the construct of those 100 Amot, east to west, north to south, and as well as with the height. Right now it's describing the structure of the Ulam, the Heichal. It says, Shloshim Ushmona Tayim Hayusham. There were 38, we call them loosely chambers, but they were not so big. They were rooms that surrounded the Heichal. And that is because the Heichal, again, is a very tall building, 100 amot high, had to have walls that were thick, but the thick walls were not solid thick walls. They were walls that had gaps or emptiness, hollowness between them. In that hollowness, there were internal structures that were able to be used. Those were the ta'im. They were on the north and southern side, which are the long sides of the Eichal. There were five ta'im on each side. And on the back, in Ma'arav, there were three ta'im over there. Again, these are between the outer walls and the inner walls of the Eichal. They had these ta'im in the hollow spaces. Chamisha sar bitzafon. There were 15 on the northern side, 15 on the southern side, Ushmona b'marav, and 8 on the western side. The reason that is because Shevet Zafon b'Shevet Darom, those on the north and the south, Chamisha al gabei Chamisha, v'Chamisha al gabehem. As I described before, there were 5 of these chambers lined up, one after each other. You can see this in the picture of the Tiferet Yisrael of the Mikdash. You have these 5 chambers on the southern side, 5 chambers on the northern side, but there's also height. And the chambers then had 3 levels of these chambers stacked on top of each other. That gives you 15 on the northern side, 15 on the southern side. Ushib Marav, on the western side, we said there were 3, room for 3 of these chambers or rooms. Shlosha al-gabei shlosha, the second level was another 3 above that. Ushnaim al-gabehem, but the top level was only 2. That's 3, 3, and 2 for a total of 8 on the western side. Shlosha tachim ayal kol echad ve'echad. This is a generalization, a loose generalization, because it's just not true of all of the rooms or all of the ta'im, but that each one of them had 3 entranceways. Echad ta me'ayamin, one to the ta that was to the right. Again, when we speak about right and left, everything is relative, but we're thinking about it from the perspective of facing in towards the heichal. When you're facing in towards the Eichal, if you're standing in any one of these rooms, to your right is another room, v'chadata me'asmol, and there's one on the left side of you, v'chadata she'al gabav, and then one to the chamber room that is above you. We had 3 p'tachim. Now, obviously, it's not true all the way around, because the top level of ta'im didn't have something that was going up, because there were no ta'im above it. The middle ta'im had something going up to the ones above it, something going down to the one below it. We don't double count it because that was already counted, the ones below, as being an entrance coming up. The ones in the corners had a different structure. The ones at the beginning of the north and southeastern side had a different structure because they were the ta'im or the entrance way to access these ta'im. So they also had a different number of doorways. So it's not true of all of the ta'im that are there. But it's a loose generalization that they had access to multiple rooms around them. Bekeren Mizrachit Tzvonit, on the northeastern side, which we already discussed, because the northeastern side, if you remember, when they were entering into the Heichal, it said there that they did not enter the main doors into the Heichal. Rather, they went through the Pishpesh Katan. They went through the little door in the north. That little door in the north led through the wall of the Heichal into one of these rooms, and then from one of these rooms into the Heichal, and then you open the doors internally, at least according to the Rabbanon. The Mishnah here seems to be following their opinion. And that is Bekeren Mizrachit Tzvonit. On the northeastern side, Hayu Chamisha Ptachim. There are actually 5 doorways of access. Echad Ta Min HaYamin, one to the Ta that is to the right of it, Echad L'Ta She'al Gabav, and then one to the Ta that is above it, Echad L'Misiba, and then one of them to the Misibah, which we'll get to in 1 second, which was behind the Ta, when you're facing into the Eichal. V'chad the Pishpesh, one entranceway from that little doorway that was on the northern side of the entrance to the Eichal, by which they entered into the Eichal, and then one into the Eichal itself. So this was the access point to the Ta'im. You had a doorway from outside of the Eichal that went into the Ta, and then from the Ta there was a doorway into the Eichal itself. That was what we discussed in yesterday's Mishnah. It also has a doorway to the one to the right of it. It also has a doorway to the one above it, and also has a doorway to the Misibah, which sits behind it. The Mishnah upcoming will discuss what the Misibah is, but there is another hollow space behind the Ta'im, both on this side, the northern side that we're discussing, and on the southern side, and seemingly on the western side as well. We'll have to discuss it when we get to the Mishnah, but that also had an entrance to that Misibah. Whatever that Misibah was, it was entered through the first Ta. The first Ta has five different entrances, egresses from it to all of these different locations, and it was also the way that you access the Ta'im. Now, truthfully, on the southern side, there was also a doorway that entered in to the Ta that was there, and there was an entrance to the Eichal, but those were sealed. That's what we read in the Mishnah, that the southern entrance was never open, because that's the way that Hashem entered through. So the one on the southeastern side also has the same structure. The difference being, number one is, maybe there's no Misibah over there, we'll have to discuss that, as well as the fact that these doors were never opened. So even though they were there, you wouldn't access the Ta'im from there because you never opened that door, and you did not access the Heichal through there because the door was never opened from the outside. It's never clear here what it means that there's access from one Ta to the Ta above it. Whether that means there was a ladder, or a staircase, or just an opening, it's never clear how exactly they access the Ta above from the Ta below. It could be that the Misibah was a part of that, but we'll discuss that when we get to the Misibah, but then you wouldn't need an internal doorway, you could get it from the external side. Hatachtuna, the bottom row of these rooms, or these Ta'im, Chamisha, was five amot wide. Virovid, Shisha. And the Rovid, which is the beam that is the roof of that Ta, is six amot wide. Hayim Sa'it, the middle row of these chambers, these rooms, Shisha, were six wide. The middle level was six wide. Birovid, Sheva. And its ceiling had beams across that were seven wide. Valyona, and the top level of these rooms, these chambers, Sheva, were seven amot wide. Shenemar, so they bring the pasuk from the Binyan HaMikdash, Hayetziah Tachtona, the lower areas, chambers, Chamesh Bama, Rachba, were five amot wide. Batichuna, the middle ones, Shesh Bama, Rachba, were six amot wide. Bashlishit, and the third level, Sheva Bama, Rachba, which is exactly what was described over here. The pasuk there goes on to say, ubimigraot habayit, which is the way that the walls of the Eichal were structured, was that you had migraot, which made it that you did not need to put little carvings into the wall. If you don't have the wall doing migraot, which means as the wall climbs, it gets narrower in a step function. As the walls go up, the external part of the walls are straight up. The internal part of the walls, as you go up, then go in an amah. Then they continue up, and then they go in an amah. Those indentations, those stair-like steps, as you go up, widen the internal space between the walls, make the walls narrower as they go up, but also facilitates your ability to rest, it's either the floor of the level above or the roof of the one below, rest the beams on those shelves that are created by the walls narrowing as you go up. That then obviates the need for you to actually drill holes into the wall. If you ever go by the Kotel Amaravi, especially if you go into the area which is covered, you will see that in the days before the Kotel Amaravi was cleared out, in the Mugrabi area over there, people lived. And the way that they created roofs, or they put something above their heads, was that they had to carve holes into the walls, and then they put the beams, or inserted the beams into those holes, in order to support the beams. And you can see those holes that are still there that would support for the beam. So in order to avoid having to do that, they built the walls thicker at the bottom, as it climbed, internally, it made a step on it, making the wall now thinner, and the step would then give a placement of the boards. That's what's being described here, and that's why the ta'im are different sizes. At the lowest level, there's only 5 amot between the two walls. Then there's a step out from internally, after you reach the first level of ta'im, is the roof of the first level of ta'im, and there the beams are placed. So those beams are 6 amot over a 5 amah area of the ta'im. So that means that the next level of ta'im is going to be 6 wide, until you get the next step, which is their roof, which is 7 amot wide. That's why you get a difference in the width of the ta'im. As the Rosh Mishnah points out over here, of a loko no nitan bo shiur, lo b'mishnah v'lo b'mikra. Not in the Mishnah, not in the Psukim, do we ever get any indication as to what the length of the ta'im were, nor do we get any sense of what the height of the ta'im were. We only know their width based on the Psukim. The Rosh Mishnah also takes great efforts to try to reconcile whatever is found here in the Mishnah with the Psukim by Shlomo HaMelech, which is interesting from two perspectives. First of all, they're different. And he notes that, first of all, there are only 33 ta'im that are mentioned in the Psukim. And that means that there were 11 at each level, 11 plus 11 plus 11 to get to 33, rather than the 38 that we say over here. And besides that, the fact that he's trying to reconcile the Migdash Rishon with the Migdash Sheni shows you how much people believe that there was a necessity to use those blueprints from Migdash Rishon and Migdash Sheni, even though the size and the ratios in Migdash Sheni were so much greater than that in Migdash Rishon. We know that even from the Heichal itself. The Heichal in Migdash Rishon was only 30 amot high, whereas in Migdash Sheni was already 100 amot high. And so the scale was much greater. Question is, if the scale was matched in order to keep it consistent, or were there certain dispensations that allowed it? But he spends time quoting from his Rebbe as how to reconcile with the Psukim. This is one of the errors which happens to reconcile in terms of the sizes, the width of the ta'im matches up with the psukim in Melachim Aleph. And interestingly, again, the Mishnayot reconcile both with Melachim Aleph and with the Yechezkel, which are describing two different Migdashot. And there is, in Migdash Sheni, a mix of things that are the sizes or the scale or the description that's found in Yechezkel, like we saw by the Ezrat Nashim, which followed the Psukim in Yechezkel. Whereas here, the Ta'im are following the sizing or the structure that was in the Migdash Rishon. Mishnayot never really identified the usage of the Ta'im. Occasionally, or in places we have names of them, which seem to indicate that they were used for storage, they were used for certain purposes. They obviously were captive and were not freely accessible because the only way to get to them was through the Ulam, which meant that generally you would have to be a Kohen in order to access them. Nevertheless, the Mishnah enumerates them without giving you any sense of what their utility was. Now, umisiba, as we mentioned before, that the first ta on the northeastern side had an entrance to the misiba. So the misiba itaula became a mizrachit sponit. It started to, ala means ascend, so you know already that the misiba has something to do with ascending, that it started on that northeastern corner. We know that because the ta had access to it on the northeastern corner. Then it went from there, the Keren Tzfonit Maravit. It went all the way along the wall, all the way until the northwestern corner. Shabayo Lim Ligagot Hatayim. That's how you got up to the roof above the Taim. So Haya Olabe Misiba. You would go up in the Misiba, Upanav the Marav. When you entered the Misiba on the northeastern corner, if you were to walk the Misiba, you're facing west, and you're walking all along the northern side from east all the way to west. Halacha kol bnei tzafon ad shemegia lemarav. You walk all the way along the northern side until you reach the northwestern corner. Yegia lemarav, when you reach the northwestern corner, hafach panav ledarom. You turn to the south, and then halach klapei marav ad shemegia ledarom. You walk the entire western side until you reach the southwestern corner. Higia klapei darom. When you reach that southwestern corner, ayu panav le mizrach. You turn east. Then ayam aleich v'darom atshu migia l'mitcha shel aliyah. Then you go all along that side until you reach the entrance to the aliyah, which is the attic or the upper level that is above, Shepitcha Shel Aliyah Patuach Klapei Daron. The entranceway to the Aliyah was on the southern side. So from this description, you have three sides that have the Misibah on it. In the picture of the Tiferet Yisrael, it only shows it on the northern side. It doesn't show this Misibah. The Misibah was clearly used to get up, to elevate oneself, and to gain access to the upper levels of the Heichal. How it worked is not exactly clear. The Rishonim give descriptions of it either being a ramp that went up in an incline. Others describe it as a Misibah that we saw earlier, which is a spiral staircase that climbed around a column that went up. Now, here it describes it as going all the way around the Heichal, along the northern side, the western side, and then into the southern side. From that, you would think that the incline worked in a way that you gained elevation as you went along the northern side. When you went to the west, you continued to go up, and then when you went to the southern side, you went up. That would make the grade of the incline less, because you wouldn't have to gain so much elevation in a short period of time. But that's not the way that many of the Rishonim describe it, or the way that it's drawn in the picture of the Tiferet Yisrael. So they describe it as being that the northern side took you the entirety of the elevation. Whatever climb you needed to do was all done on the northern side. When you went on the western side and then around to the southern side, you were already either at the elevation you needed to be, or there was very little gain of elevation anymore. You were already at the level of the attic. You just couldn't get access to the attic at that point in time until you went around to the southern side. It's clear that the Misibah went around, but the Misibah not necessarily climbing the entire way. If it did climb the entire way, then you could imagine the possibility that the Ta'im had access through the Misibah, which is that you access the first level of Ta'im at the beginning of the Misibah. As the Misibah climbed, then it turned the corner. Maybe at that point you could reach the second level of the Ta'im. And if it went around the western side till it hit the southern side at that corner, maybe it already reached the third level of the Ta'im. So if it climbs as it goes around, there is a possibility that you could get access to the Ta'im through the Misibah at different points, and that would help you get to the different levels. Again, even though there's access internally from the rooms, this would give you maybe a faster way to gain access. Now, the reason for it was because Shepitcha Shaliyah Patuach Klapei Darom, the entranceway to the upper chamber above the Kodesh and the Kodesh Rishim was from the south. And the entranceway to the Aliyah, there were these two huge beams of cedar wood. From there you would then get onto the roof, Shel Aliyah, the upper part or the roof part of the Aliyah. If it is like the way that the Rosh Mishnas describes it over here, this was actually a ladder. And that is, these two beams had rungs that ran between them. And the way that you got from the Misibah up to the Aliyah Gag was to climb this ladder. And this ladder was made up of these two beams, the thicker part at the bottom, the narrower part at the top. Uberoshan, Pispasin, Magdilin, Balia, Ben HaKodesh, Leben Kodesh HaKodeshim. And then when you reach the Aliyah Gag, which ran over the entirety of the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKodeshim, it wasn't a separation. There on the floor, on the walls, however we described Pispasim before, which we used a number of times. They were used to divide up the Beit HaMokeid. They're also used to divide between the Ezrat Yisrael and the Ezrat Kohanim. So that similar structure was also used over here to divide between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKodeshim. So even though you're above them, it was demarcating above them where the Kodesh was, where the Kodesh HaKodeshim was underneath you. Now, it's not clear here how the ladder itself or the Klonosot played a role in that. If you think they're a ladder, it might just be separate, this whole issue, separate structure or separate mechanism for giving that division. If you think that these Klonosot were actually the entranceway to the Aliyah and the Misibah already got you up to that level, maybe these Klonosot were a part of the entranceway, and they themselves were a part of that structure that indicated you entered the Aliyah where the Kodesh met the Kodesh HaKodeshim. That's also a possibility. Now, the reason they're describing this is because V'lulei mayu p'tuchim b'Aliyah, the Beit Kodshei HaKodeshim. In that upper area, that second level, there were these windows, quote-unquote, access points to get into the Kodesh HaKodeshim from above the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Shebehem ayu mishashalim et ha'umanim. That's how they used to lower down the craftsmen, tevot, inside of these boxes, these units, which prevented them from focusing on anything in the Kodesh HaKodeshim, aside from the work that they were doing. Kodesh leizanu enehem mibeit Kodesh HaKodeshim. So they would not get benefit from the Kodesh HaKodeshim, or the Shekhinah is present in the Kodesh HaKodeshim, so you don't want individuals just entering in there. But the work has to be done. They need to do fixes to the walls, to the structure. So they lowered them in from above in these closed boxes with openings for them to do the work. But that made it, they were solely focused on what they were working on. They couldn't look around. They couldn't be looking at the Shekhinah. And that's the way that they did constructive rehabilitation of the area of the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Alright, here the Rambam, next parish of Mishnayot, says about these umanim, these individuals, craftsmen who were brought in to do the work, if the binyan needed some work on it, mishtadlin umikavnim sheya uman kohen kasher. They would try at best to have a kohen kasher be the one who does the work. Bim lo efshar, if you can't get a kohen kasher, shelo nimsa ela Yisrael, yikanes, then Yisrael can go in. And in the Tosefta ev kelim, it says, "Akol nechtasim libnot ulutakein ulutzi tuma." Anybody is qualified to do work in the mikdash to fix things or to take tuma out. Mitzvah v'kohanim. The best way to do it is to use craftsmen that were kohanim. Ein kohanim nechtasim levim. Then we go to the second best. We go to levim. Ein levim nechtasim israelim. Then you use israelim. Mitzvah v'tohorim. It's better to use someone who's tohor. Ein tohorim nechtasim tmeim. If you don't have anybody's Torah, you can bring in Tmeim. Mitzvah bitzmimim. It's a mitzvah to use someone who is a active in-service Kohen or in-service individual because they don't have any Mumim. Ain't Tmeimim, nichsim Balei Mumim. If you don't have that, then you do Balei Mumim. Mitzvah shikansu b'tevot. The best way to go in is in these closed boxes. Ain't sham tevot, yikansu derech tachim. Then they just go in the regular way. So what it seems to be is that Tosefta in Kelim, which describes, like the Mishnayot in the beginning of Kelim, the different levels of Kedusha, you have a similar thing with regards to the work that was done in terms of renovations on the Mikdash or fixes that needed to be done, which is that it's Dichuya. Dichuya means that you have permission to do it, but we try to do it in the least problematic way. And the least problematic way is to use a Kohen Kasher, that's Tahor, that's Tamim. But then, if we can't find that, then we have gradations of individuals that we will use from the best suited individual to the least suited individual to do it. And again, going in the tevot is the best way, but if you can't do it the tevot, then you gotta just do it, because you can't let the structure fall apart or crumble. You have to take care of it. And so therefore, there is a disposition to do it, but you have to do it in the least intrusive way that is possible. And that's what's being described in the Mishnah as to how they did it. In terms of doing the fixes in the Beit Kodshei HaKodeshim. Now, the description of the Eichal is Mea, Al Mea, Arom Mea. It is 100 Amot cubed. That means that its depth running east to west is 100 Amot. Its height is 100 Amot. And its width running from east and north to south is also 100 Amot. Now, the Mishnah is going to go through first the height, and it's going to start with Ha'otem Sheish Amot. The base was 6 amot high. Here, some of the Rishonim just simply speak about a yisod. That was the foundation. The foundation itself was 6 amot high. That's the beginning of the elevation of the Eichal. On the other hand, if you remember the stairs that entered into the Ulam, there were 12 stairs entering into the Ulam. 12 stairs at a half amah elevation is 6 amot. That means that the Eichal was elevated above the floor level of the Azara by 6 Amot. So the Otem might simply be that elevation of the 6 Amot, and they had walls that went around that elevated structure. They had walls to close it in, or they used whatever filler material that they used in order to elevate it. They had to close it in, so those were the retaining walls around it, not necessarily the foundation walls of the Heichal. But that's the first 6 Amot of the height. The Gova, Arba'im Amah. And then the internal Ulam and the Kodesh HaKodeshim had ceilings that were 40 amot above it. So that means that the rooms that we had talked about here anything you entered in the Kodesh of Kodeshim, the Ulam had 40 amot high height. Va'ama kiur. And then above that you have an ama of kiur. The Rosh Mishnah says the word kiur is synonymous with siur, which means that those were the decorative drawings, whether they were frescoes, paintings, color, whatever it was that was on the ceiling of the Heichal and the Ulam. So that was a kiur. The Rambam describes it as chafirot shemifatchim habinaim, some sort of carvings that the builders put in, besidu ba'avanim. They do with plaster and with stones. Ve'amataim beit dilfa. And then there are two amot of beit dilfa. Over here, it's machloket again as to what that is. The Rambam and some of the other Rishonim describe it as a nikuz, or a way to move the water away if there was water leakage or spillage in there, which is that they left a gap in between the ceiling of the Kodesh, the Heichal, and that which is above it, which is the floor of the Aliyah. There was a gap there of two amot. That gap of two amot let any water that came down the walls or leaked in to flow out. It probably was on a angle of some sort, and allowed to drain the water away from the center to the outside or to the areas that took care of the water drainage, which we'll see later. Vama tikra, and then you have an ama of the tikra itself. The Tiferet Yisrael and others describe the Beit Dilfa as being the mechanism for getting the walls to hold up the ceiling. The tikra is an ama thick. The tikra had to sit on something. So that something is the Beit Dilfa, which is the way that they got from the walls to the tikra. There was some sort of, whether it was an angle, platforms, beams that ran across, those were supportive of the ceiling that sat above it. So the Beit Dilfa of two amot was the structural support for the tikra that sat above it, not a waterway, but rather the way that they supported the ceiling or attached it to the walls. That was called the Beit HaDilfa. That's the way the Tiferet Yisrael describes it. So you have two amot of the Beit Dilfa, and then you have one ama of the tikra of the roof itself, v'ama maziva. And then you have an ama of plaster above it, which is the to the base or the floor of the next level, as well as the sealant for the ceiling that is below it. So far you have here six amot for the base. Then you have 40 amot of height, which is 46. Then you have one ama of kiur, which is 47. And then you have two amot of Beit Dilfa, which is 49. And then you have one ama of tikra, which is 50. And then you have one ama of maziva, which is 51. So that's so far we've gotten 51 amot of height, six of which are the base. So that really means that the Eichal itself was 45 amot. And what we're going to do now is replicate that again in the Aliyah. The Gova Shel Aliyah. The upper chamber that we discussed before that sits above the Kodesh and the Kodesh Kodeshim, that was Memama. It also was 40 amot high. Ama Kiur. It also had one ama of either drawings or plaster or carvings. Vamatayim Beit Dilfa. Two amot of either a water drainage or two amot of structural support to hold the ceiling. Ama Tikra. One ama of Tikra. Vama Maziva. And then another ama of the plastering of the roof. In this section, you have another 45 amot. That's because you have 40 of height. Then you have one amot of kiur is 41. You have two amot of Beit Dilfa is 43. And then you have one amot of tikra, which is 44. And then one amot of meziva, which is 45. So we had 51 from the previous count. 45 and 45 is 90, plus the 6 of the base. That's 96. And then to get to the 100, you had gimel amot makeh. On the roof of the Eichal, you had a fencing, it's not literally fencing, but you had a perimeter that went around it that was 3 amot high. Vama kala urev. And then you had an ama of the spikes or whatever was put up there to keep away the birds from landing on top of the Heichal. It was both very practical in the sense that they didn't want birds perching there and ruining it by dirting it or soiling it. They also didn't want birds bringing tuma or possible pieces of tuma there, which would cause problems. And they also, it was inappropriate that birds would be hanging out there if this is a building of glory, the place of Hashem, the residence of Hashem, it's not appropriate for the birds to be hanging out there. The Gemara discusses that they did not necessarily need Kala Orev in the first Beit HaMikdash, because when the Shekhinah was present, it itself warded off the birds. It's only in the Beit Sheni, where the Shekhinah was not present, did they need the Kala Orev. The Rambam seems to describe the Kala Orev as being these blades that they were sitting up there. There was these panels of metal blades, very sharp at the top, like knives, that were put all the way around. I gather whether they were shaped as squares or as diamonds, so that the birds would not sip it on them because they were too sharp or they would hurt their feet. The Rosh Mishatz describes them as shipudim, as spikes that were put up over there. The Oroch describes it as a dachlil, that they were types of scarecrows that were used up there, or some shapes, whatever it was, that kept away the birds. And they were called the Kala Orev because they got rid of, or they, according to the Rambam, me'abed, they ruined any bird that landed on them. They were so sharp or they were so thin at the top that the bird was injured or chased away by it, and that's what's called Kala Orev. And that gets you your 100 amot, because that's the final 4 amot of the height of the Eichal. Rabbi Yehuda Meir lo ya Kala Orev ole min abida. He says the Kala Orev is beyond the height of the Eichal. It doesn't count towards the height. That the perimeter on the top was 4 amot high. There is a description in the Rosh Mishatz that the roof of the Eichal, not only did the Ma'akeh also go around the perimeter and have that height, but it seems, according to him, that the Eichal came to a point in the middle, and that the roof was slanted, obviously to have the water drain off of the roof. That slanted roof at the center point was the same height as the perimeter around. And so that's why it's counted towards the height of the Eichal, because it actually was a part of the Eichal. So he says here about the roof, Agaga soy alamaziva mishupa vola ad shum govo shel makeh, that it rose in the middle until the level of the makeh. That's one interesting thing the Rosh Mishan says. And then he says about the Otem. Otem is a miftan govo ami aretz sheshama, that the threshold was above the ground 6 amot, bibinyan atum chomas tuma, with a wall that closes it in. Tzarich lomar ma'alot hayu be'ulam, that there were stairs in the ulam, shemehen olim ala miftan, from there you entered from the ulam onto this platform, umordot ve'echal de'reid ve'hen mimiaf miftan, and then in the echal itself there were stairs that descended from it. So he seems to indicate that this otem was 6 amot high, which was actually the threshold of the Heichal, and you had to ascend from the Ulam to it, and then descend when you went through the doorway back down from the threshold into the Heichal. It's a very interesting and somewhat difficult explanation of what the Otem was. The other thing to note is that the Rambam here has a different explanation of the Ta'im. It's both difficult to really understand what he's describing over here, but it's clearly different than what we described in terms of the Ta'im and the structure of the building. And in addition, the Rambam says about the issue of Roved, he does this here as well as he did it back by the stairs of the Ulam. When we spoke about the stairs of the Ulam, they spoke about an Amah and then a Roved, which was a longer flat piece that was there. The Rambam speaks about it, Roved being a protrusion. And therefore he said that these were things that were on the side of the Ulam that actually protruded out from the Ulam itself. That's what the Roved was. It wasn't describing the stairs into the Ulam. Rather, you can see this in Od Yud Aleph, the pictures of the Rambam. Again, all the pictures of the Rambam are hard to understand because he's drawing two dimensions rather than three dimensions. But from there, he has the Kotel Ulam and he sees these Rovadim sticking out of it. If that's the case, then the Roved also that's being described over here is similar in the Rambam's picture. You can see that in Yud Chet, that he also has the Yitziyah on the Roved as being some sort of decorative or protrusions that are coming out of the wall. So again, the Rambam has a slightly different view of that. So just to be aware of the fact that the Rambam has a different explanation, we followed in general the view of the Tiferet Yisrael as well as some of the other Rishonim as to the description over here. So now we got the height of the Heichal. Now the Mishnah moves on to the Mizrach Lemarav Me'ama. From the east to west, it was 100 Amot. Kotel Ha'ulam. How do you get 100 amot? Well, the wall of the ulam, starting on the eastern side, the entrance to the ulam, through the thickness of the wall, which was the petach ha-ulam, the thickness of the wall on that side was 5 5 amot thick. Then haulam 11, the ulam itself is 11 amot deep. Kotel haikal, then you hit the wall of the haikal. The petach haikal goes through that wall. We saw yesterday that that wall extended, or that entranceway, was 6 amot in depth. That's where the doors open to cover that area. So that the kotel haikal is 6, sheish. So far you have the 5 for the wall, 6 for the wall of the haikal, plus the 11, so you have 22 amot. You have 11 and 11, which is 22 amot. Bitocho arbaim ama. Then inside or internally, the kodesh was 40 amot. So that's 22 plus 40 is 62. Ve'ama traksin. And then you had what was in the Beit HaMikdash Rishon, a wall that was an ama wide. So the Gemara in the beginning of Baba Batra discusses in Bayit Sheni, the ceiling was too high, and therefore could not support a wall structure that had a base of 1 amah and climbed sufficiently to reach up to 40 amot. Therefore, they used parachot, like b'mishkan, to divide between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKodeshim. The only problem is, they didn't know if the amah belonged to the Kodesh or the Kodesh HaKodeshim. So in order to deal with that uncertainty, they actually put up 2 parachot. They put one at the beginning of the amah, one at the end of the amah, and the amah sat between the 2 parachot, and that's what's described in the Mishnah Yoma, that the Kohen HaGadol would enter from the right side, cross all the way between the parachot, and then enter again, make a right turn to enter the Kodesh HaKodeshim. So now you have the amah traksin. So you have 62 plus the amah traksin is 63. Vesrim amah, 20 amot of the Kodesh HaKodeshim is 83 for the Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. Then you have Kotel Eichal. You have the back wall of Eichal, which is another 6, which is 89. Vehata. Then the ta is 6. Now we saw the ta'im were 5, 6, and 7 wide. The Mishnah picks the middle level ta'im to give you the average span. Some say that the first level of ta'im was below the otem. Therefore, only the second level of ta'im was level with the floor of the Eichal. Fir Tisel says that. I think it's very difficult to understand. Makes more sense to say all the ta'im above, but you have ta'im that are 5, 6, and 7, so either the walls are thicker down below, or the walls are thinner up above. So it took the middle row, which is the average, where the walls are 6 thick, and the ta'a is also 6 thick. That way you get to 95 amot at this point. The kotel ta, and then the wall on the other side of the ta'a is kamesh, is 5, similar to the wall of the ulam. That gets you from 95 to 100. Those are your 100 amot for the east-west of the Heikal. Minatzafon ledarom. Now let's go from north to south. Shivim amah. You just said before it was 100 amot. Now you're telling me it's 70 amot, so we'll have to reconcile that. Kotel hamisiba. Starting on the northern side, the kotel of the Heikal, which has the misiba on the other side of it, is chamesh. It's 5 amot thick. Hamisiba shalosh. Misiba itself is 3 amot wide. The kotel hata. Then the wall between the misiba and the ta'im is chamesh. So now we've got, so far, 8 for the wall of the misiba and the misiba, plus another 5 for the kotel ha-ta, which is now 13. And then you have a ta, sheish. Again, the average ta is 6, so that's now 19. Kotel ha-echal, sheish. The wall of the echal between the ta'im and the echal itself is 6. That gets you to 25. Tocho esrim amah, the width of the Kodesh, or the Kodesh HaKodeshim, is 20, which is now 45. Now you have the other side. Kotel Eichal on the other side is 6, gets you to 51. Vata Sheish, then the Ta itself is 6, which is then 57. Kotel Ata is Chamesh. The wall of the Ta on the other side is 5, which gets you to 62. Beit Horada Tamayim is Shalosh. The Beit Horada Tamayim, which we will discuss in a second, has 3 in width, which is the equivalent of the Misiba. On the northern side, on the southern side, you have this Beit Horada Tamayim, which then gets you to 65 through the Shlosh Amot, Ba'kotel. And then the outer wall of the Eichal on the southern side is Chamesh Amot. That gets you 70 Amot, which is what we just described. Now the Beit Horada Tamayim seems to be in the location of where the Misiba is. On the northern side, that's Beit Horada Tamayim, is on the southern side. The problem with that is that the Mishnah before said that the Misiba went all the way around. It went to all 3 sides. That's why many discussed that the Misiba was already up at the level of the Aliyah on the northern side, and it was just crossing around on top of the Aliyah, and the Beit Horada Tamayim was below it. Even if you think, like I described before, that the Misiba continues to climb all the way around, It seems that the Beit Horeh Tamayim was below that Mesiba at that point. Now, some or many describe it, here you have the Rambam and the Rosh Mishnah Sevir describe the Beit Horeh Tamayim as being the water drainage. Just like you had the Beit Dilfa, which drained the water from the roof and from the middle level, if it got through there, it had to drain it into something. So this was the empty area where the water drained, both from the roof and from the internally. If you had water, everything was angled towards there. And this was a hollow space that allowed for the water to drain out of the Heichal. It's especially important if you believe that the Heichal was flat on the roof and not pointed. The Rosh Mishnah said it was pointed, that would force the water to the sides. If you force it to the sides, you have to dispose of the water somehow. And this might have been the gutter structure to dispose of the water, whether it was flat or slanted. The water was pushed to that side and then drained through there. Now, Beit Horeh Tamayim could have been open space. That's what seems to be described by the Rambam, the Rosh Mishnah. It could be that it was the gutter piping. It was just done internally rather than externally so that it didn't ruin the look of the Heichal. So that was it. It could have been the piping of the gutter itself that ran through the Beit Horeh Tamayim. Others describe it as the bringing of the waters from the Mayan to the Beit HaTevilah. And that was part of the piping, a water piping system that brought the water in. That seems to me to be much more difficult because the Heichal is not attached to any of the Lishkot, which were on the outer perimeter of the Azara, and that seems much harder. And again, Horeh Tamayim seems to be something that's bringing water down or draining water off. That's on that southern side. And again, that has to be reconciled with what the Mesiba that was on that side as well. They both are three amot wide. Maybe they're on different levels. Maybe they cross over each other at some point. But there is some overlap between the Mesiba and the Horeh Tamayim on that southern side. Now, we said that the Heichal was 100 by 100 by 100. You gave me 100 height. You gave me 100 from east to west. But you only gave me 70 from north to south. Where's the 100? That is Olam Udefalav Chamesh Yisrei Amah Min HaTzafon, Chamesh Yisrei Amah Min HaDarom. The Ulam, and this is what everybody knows, the famous pictures of the Heichal, that the front of the Heichal is wider than the back of the Heichal. The Ulam, the antechamber to going into the Heichal, was 15 amot wider on the northern side and 15 amot wider on the southern side. That makes up the additional 30 amot that are missing from the 70 to get you to 100 amot. Those areas which are extended, Behunikra, Beit HaChalifot. Sham Gonzim et HaSakinim. That's where they kept. That's where they stored all the knives. That area on the northern and southern side, the 15 Amot that extend beyond the Heichal, they were known as the Beit HaChalifot. Chalaf, which is the word that we use today to describe the Shochet's knife. And it was the area where the Kohanim stored their knives or Shechita knives. And it's called Beit HaChalifot. And many of the Rishonim point out that in Arabic, that Khalfa means a knife, and that's the meaning of the word also occasionally in Tanakh to mean a knife or something sharp. And the Beit Khalifot was the place where they stored the knife, and that's what today is the Khalaf, is the knife of the Shochet. It all comes from this. So the Beit Khalifot also had an area or entrances to the Ulam and then out to that area. The Gemara in Zvachim discusses that was Machshir, that area to be used because it was considered to be Petach O Moed, because there was a doorway, a back doorway from there on an angle that allowed you to enter into the Beit Khalifot or the chamber that was there. That entranceway made it that it was also classified as Petach O Moed, so you could shech Kodashim around the sides of the Heichal. Veichal Tsar Me'achurav Rachav Milefanav. And based on what we described here, the Heichal was narrow in the back and it was wide in the front. And it looks like a lion. You think about a lion with a big mane, a great mane on it. It is wide in the front because of its head and its mane, and then its body is narrower in the back. Shinemar, and the reason they did this is because the Pasuk in Yeshayahu says, Hoi, Ariel, Ariel, Kiryat, Chana, David. Whoa, or how wondrous, Ariel, Ariel, is a reference to the Mikdash. Kiryat, Chana, David. In the city, or the location where David settled or inhabited. So the city of Yerushalayim that has Ariel. In Yechezkel, as we already noted earlier in the Masechta, Ariel references to the Mizbeach. Over here in Yishayahu, Ariel references to the Mikdash as a whole. Because the Mizbeach is the central part of the Mikdash, and as we saw before, the most important part of the Mikdash, because of the fact that you can be Makriv on the Mizbeach without anything else besides the Mizbeach being put in place and in the right location and right size. And so there might have been some interplay between the Mizbeach being called the Ariel and the Mikdash being called the Ariel. But because it's called the Ariel, Ma'ari, Tsar Me'achorav, just like the lion is narrow from behind, Berachav Milefanav and wide in the front. Ava Echal Tsar Me'achorav, Berachav Milefanav. So too the Echal was narrow in the back, and the Ulam, which was in the front, was wider. And you can imagine why you would shape the Echal like a lion, both because the lion represents strength, it also represents Malchut, it's the Siman of Shevet Yehuda. And so too over here, we're talking about the Malchut of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, therefore it would be appropriate to have the lion represent the shaping of the Heichal, which was the place of Hashrat HaShechina, as well as the idea that this is a place of obviously tremendous importance and hierarchy, and therefore the lion was used to represent that in the shaping of the Heichal and the way that it was designed. Alright, with that we end the fourth parak, Hadronach Pitcho Shel Heichal, and now we're going to be in the final parak of Masechet Midot, which is actually going to go back to what we discussed earlier, which is the Azara. The Mishnayot before gave us the dimensions of the Azara, but never laid them out for us, and that's what it's going to do at this point, which is that the Azara Haita Orech in length was Mea Bishmonim Bisheva, 187, that's from east to west. Arochav, and the width of it was, that's from north to south, Mea Shloshim V'chamesh, 135 Amot. So the Mishnah first does Mimizrach L'marav, from the eastern side all the way to the western side, the dimensions that are given here. You can see in the pictures, again, that I sent out from Masechet Midot, that begins on the eastern side, as the Mishnah describes over here. There's Yud Aleph Ama, which is Makom Drishat Rage Yisrael, Yud Aleph Ama, the area of Ezrat Yisrael, which was described in the Mishnah before, 11 Amot by 135, the first 11 Amot from the east to the west were the Ezrat Yisrael, Makom Drishat HaKohanim, 11 Ama, then the Makom of the Kohanim was also 11 Amot by 135, so that's the 22 Amot, HaMizbeach, the footprint of the Mizbeach, we know is 32, Shloshim Ushtayim, so now you have 22 and 32, which is 54. Ben Olam the Mizbeach. Again, we discussed earlier in the Mishnayot, between the Ulam and the Mizbeach, is Esrim Ushtayim, is 22. The 22 Amot, Ben Olam the Mizbeach, makes it 76. And the Heil, which is incorrect here, it should be the Heichal, is Kufama. And then the Heichal is 100 Amot, as we already described, from east to west. So then that 76 plus the 100 Amot of the Heichal is 176. And then you have 11 Amot, that is Achadisra Malach, Rei Beit HaKaporet. Then 11 Amot behind the Kodesh HaKodeshim, which is called the Beit HaKaporet, because it's a place where the Kaporet, that's the description of the Aron, sat. So it's behind that area. There's 11 Amot there. That gets you the total of 187 Amot. Ben Safon Lidarom. From north to south, Mea Shloshim V'chamesh. There's 135 Amot. So here the Mishnah skips. Min HaKevesh U'Lemizbeach. So from the Kevesh and the Mizbeach, Shishim U'Shtayim. There's 62 Amot. What's clearly missing here, and the Mishnah will address it later, is from the wall of the Azara on the southern side until you reach the ramp of the Mizbeach. There it gives you no information. But starting with the ramp of the Mizbeach and the Mizbeach, it says 62. That's also difficult because the Mizbeach was 32 by 32, and the ramp was 32. That would make it 64. So the Gemara in Zvachim asked that question, how can you say the footprint in the Azara is 62 if it really takes up 64? So the Rambam, the Perush Mishnayot over here, and many of them are Farshei HaMishnayot, which when we discussed the Kevesh the other day, I mentioned that many of them believe that the 32 Amot of the Kevesh was actually the hypotenuse. And that means that the flat bottom of it, the ramp rose 9 Amot. So you have a 9 Amot height, 32 by hypotenuse. That gives you a base of the ramp of being 30 Amot plus. It was a little more than 30 Amot. So on a rounding basis, it's 30 Amot. So if the base of the ramp is 30 Amot and the Mizbeach is 32, that's how you get to 62. That's how the Mefarshei Mishnah, many of them deal with it over here. The Gemara in Zvachim gives a totally different answer and says that the 32 Amot were actually the base of the ramp and that the incline of the ramp was actually 33.24 Amot, the hypotenuse, because it was 32 at the base, 9 Amot of height, And that makes the hypotenuse 33.24 amot. So then, if that's the case, how do you have 62 between the kevesh and the mizbeach if the base of the kevesh is 32 and the base of the mizbeach is 32? The Gemara in Tzvachim answers that's because there is an amah of the yisod and the amah of the soveiv, which the ramp goes over to reach the top of the mizbeach. And therefore, the ramp overlaps the mizbeach for two amot. It overlaps the mizbeach where the yisod is and overlaps the mizbeach where the soveiv is until it reaches the top of the mizbeach where it is then adjacent to the mizbeach. Given that, there's two amot of overlap. That means that the 32 amot of the footprint of the kevesh and the 32 of the mizbeach, which equals 64, two of them are overlapping. And that's why you get to 62 amot. So that's the first indication of the width of the azara is 62 amot. That's the kevesh and the mizbeach. Minas mizbeach letabot. From the northern side of the Mizbeach to the Tabaot that we described before, which are the rungs that they use to do the Shechita of the animals, Shmona Amot. That's 8 Amot. So you have 62 plus 8 is 70. Makoma Tabaot, Esrim Ba'arba'a. The Tabaot themselves are 24 Amot. So that gets you to 94 Amot. Mina Tabaot, the Shulchanot. From those Tabaot to the Shulchanot that we described before, those are the Shulchanot Shel Shayish that are in the Beit Mitbachayim. So that takes up 4 amot. So now we're up to 98 amot. Then, mina shulchanot, olen anasim, from the shulchanot to those small pillars that had the wood pieces on top of them, which were used for the hefshet of the animals for flaying and quartering the animals, that's another 4 amot. That's another 4 amot. Now you're up to 102 amot. Mina nasim la kotel azara. And then from the nanasim themselves to the kotel azara, that is 8 amot. So that's up to 110 amot. That means that, vamotar, there's left over of 25 amot. Bena kevesh la kotel umakoma nanasim. That's divided up between the original part where we started from the ramp of the mizbeach. We never said from the southern wall of the azara to the mizbeach how much space there was. And also over here, we never gave any indication as to what the nanasim took up. How much space do those flaying stations take up? That we didn't give. So the Mishnah seems to indicate you split the 25 evenly between them. And that is the Shita of the Rambam, the 12.5 amot were given to from the southern wall until the beginning of the Mizbeach. And 12.5 amot were given the Makom and Anasim. Now, there is another issue with this Mishnah, which is that the Mishnah never gives you the space where the Shulchanot stood. It tells you that from the Tabaot to the Shulchanot is 4 Amot, and from the Shulchanot to the Nanasim is 4 Amot. But it never tells you how much the Shulchanot take up. So the Rambam, in dealing with that, says, Vihi Makoma Shulchanot, that the space that was describing from the Tabaot to the Shulchanot, and from the Shulchanot to the Nanasim, those 8 Amot incorporated within them the Shulchanot themselves as well. And the reason not to identify the Shulchanot separately is because either they moved around or because they were used in conjunction with the Nanasim. And that's why the Rambam doesn't identify a separate location for them independent of the spaces that are already mentioned. And that's why the Rambam comes up with a division of 12.5 from the wall until the ramp and another 12.5 for the place of the Nanasim. Again, I have this all pictorially laid out. And we also have a machloket in the Rishonim. That's the Rambam's view. Rashi, on the other hand, has two views, both of which believe that the Shulchanot took up 4 amot to start with. So there was an additional 4 amot that's not mentioned here, which is the Makom HaShulchanot. That takes away from the 25 left over. We only have 21 amot left over. Now, you could then divide that evenly, 10.5 from the wall until the Kevesh, 10.5 from the Nanasim. That's one version or view in Rashi. There is another view in Rashi that actually it was 12.5 from the wall until the Kevesh, and then there was only 8.5 amot left from the Makom HaNanasim. Those differences in Rashi, the Shita Rishon in Rashi, and the Shita Bet in Rashi, are caused by where was the placement of the Mizbeach. And that is because the Gemara believes that the Tana of Midot believes that Rubei the Mizbeach, the Rov of Mizbeach was in the Darom, was in the southern side of the Azara. What that means is that machloket rishonim, two of those views are brought in Rashi. And depending where, how far you think the Mizbeach is skewed to the south, will determine how much space is left between the wall of the Azara and the beginning of the ramp. And then that will contribute whatever's left over to the Makom Hananasim. So when you say Rubei Ridarom, at minimum there has to be 5 amot of the Mizbeach that are actually in the northern side. And that's because it's in front of the Petach Shel Heikal. So if you do that, which is the first sheet that's brought in Rashi, then the majority or large majority of the Mizbeach and the Kevesh are on the southern side, and only 5 amot of it are extending onto the northern side of the Azara, and leaves only 10.5 amot between the wall of the Azara and the Kevesh HaMizbeach to get to the halfway point of the Azara. On the other hand, the second sheet of Brayden Rashi and the sheet of the Rambam was that there were 7 amot of the Mizbeach that were on the northern side, and that makes it that there was 2 more amot between the wall and the Kevesh, which made it 12.5 amot between the wall and the Kevesh. Rabbi Yitzchak Rabbi Yehuda, who is the Rabbi Shul Rashi, thinks that there were 6.5 amot of the Mizbeach that were in the northern side. That means that there's 12 amot between the wall of the Azara and the Kevesh. And then there's the sheet of the Rabbeinu Chananel, which is a very difficult sheet, which says that there were 11.5 amot of the Mizbeach was on the northern side of the Azara, and then that would leave 17 amot between the wall of the Azara and the Kevesh of the Mizbeach, and then taking out the 4 amot for the Shulchanot, and then the residual of the 25 would then be what was the space of the Nanasim. So according to the Rabbeinu Chananel, that would leave 25 minus 17 minus 4 is 21, leaves you 4 amot for the Nanasim. For the Rebbe of Rashi, where you have 12 amot from the Kevesh to the wall of the Azara, and 4 amot for the Makom HaShulchanot, that's 16. It leaves you 9 amot for the Nanasim. And then for the Rambam, you split it evenly, so it's 12.5 from the Kevesh to the Kotel, and another 12.5, which is the Makom HaNanasim. Rashi has the same 12.5 from the wall of the Azara to the Kevesh in his second Shita, but he divides up the remainder between 4 amot for the Shulchanot and 8.5 amot for the Nanasim. And then the first sheet of Rashi, there's 10.5 amot from the wall to the Kevesh, plus the 4 amot of the Shulchanot, so that's 14.5. And the residual being 10.5 was the Makom HaNanasim. We discussed this heavily in Zvachim, and again, you can see this pictorially in that which I sent out. Now, the Mishnah continues and says, Sheish Lishkot Ayub Azara. There were 6 chambers in the Azara. Shalosh b'tzafon v'shalosh b'darom. 3 in the north, 3 in the south. Shib b'tzafon. The girsa that we have in the Mishnah is shib b'tzafon, but many have the girsa flipped, and the Gemara in Yoma flips the girsa and has this be the word darom. So we're going to read it like the Gemara does, which is at shib b'darom. On the southern side, you had lishkat hamelach. You had the chamber of the salt, lishkat haparve, the lishkat hamadichim. And now it explains what each of these 3 chambers were. These were in the southeastern corner of the Azara. You can see them in the picture of the Tiferet Yisrael. They are Lamed, Lamed Aleph, and Lamed Bet. There, these are the 3 chambers all the way to the southeastern side of the Azara. Lishkat hamelach, shushamayu notem melach lekorban. They store the salt for the korbanot there. It makes sense because the ramp to the Mizbeach is very close by, and most of the salting was done in that area by the Mizbeach, and that was the storage area for the salt. Lishkat haparveh, shamayu mochim orot kodeshim. Over there they used to salt the hides of the animals, meaning they would process the hides of the animals that were taken and given to the Kohanim. So they would process them over there, they would salt them over there. As to the source of the name Parveh, the Gemara in Yoma speaks about a Mechashef, an Amgosha, the sorcerer, magician, that actually either created that area, which obviously is very difficult, because why would they keep something like that around in the Migdash? The other explanation that's brought by the Oruch is that he made, through his sorcery, a hole in the wall in order to be able to watch the Kohen Gadol doing his avodah on Yom Kippurim. He was found and killed, and they kept the name there to warn others not to do something similar. Or it came from the word parva, from the word parim, because that's where the salting of the parim was done, and therefore it took on the name of the largest animals that were done in that area. And on the roof of the Beit HaParveh was the mikveh that the Kohen Gadol used in Yom Kippur, because he has to do chamesh tefilot and eser nitilot yadayim. And so those five tefilot, the first of which was done in a mikveh in the chol before he enters, but the other four were done in the azara itself. And this is the mikveh that he used. Lishkat HaMadichin, the last of those three was the Lishkat HaMadichin. That's where they rinsed out or cleaned out the innards of the animal. As we discussed earlier in the Masechta and in Tamid, that's only true of the stomach of the animal that they cleaned out over there. The other intestines and innards were cleaned on the tables that in the Beit HaMidrashim, right near where they flayed and quartered the animals. It was only the stomach that had a lot of perish, had a lot of disgusting and residual stuff in it, that they had to clean it in a specific place. It's not dirty or anything else, and keep it out of the Azara itself. That was Lishkat HaMadichin. U'misham misibah ola the gag Beit HaParveh. So whatever you take the word misibah means, that you have here in the Beit HaMadichin, you had some way to access the roof of the Beit HaParveh where the mikveh was. You went through the Lishkat HaMadichin to get up there, whether again it was a spiral staircase that let you get up, or there was some sort of ramp at the back of the Lishkat HaMadichin that allow you to climb up to the upper level or to the roof of the Lishkat HaParveh where the mikveh was found. Shibud Arom, which is the way we have it in the Mishnah, again, we're going to follow the Gemara's view that the Girzir is Tzafon. The chamber is on the northern side. Lishkat HaEitz, Lishkat HaGola, Lishkat HaGazit. Lishkat HaEitz, the purpose of the Lishkat HaEitz, Amar Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, Shechachti Mayata Mishameshet. I forgot what they used it for. That they have a similar refrain from Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov with regards to one of the chambers in the Ezrat Nashim. And it's also a clear indication that he's likely the author of the Mishnayot and Midot, because he's saying here, I don't remember what it was, implying that he was giving the rest of the information as to what everything was. Again here, like earlier in the Masechta, Abba Shaul Omer, Abba Shaul says something, but here, as opposed to earlier in the Masechta where it's an answer to what Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov forgot, here Abba Shaul enters in new information, which is Lishkat Kohen Gadol Hayta Achorei Shteihem. The Lishkat Kohen Gadol was behind both of them. Begav Shloshtam Shaveh. And the roofs of all three of them were equal. So according to him, there were three chambers over here. And one of the chambers was larger than the other two chambers. It extended to the length of two chambers. So you have three chambers, not of equal size, two of which are now the size of one of them, but their roof is flat. So the mission never does give us the information as to why it's called Lishkat HaEitz. That leads the Mefarshim to speculate as to why it's called Lishkat HaEitz. A lot of them are very difficult explanations. The most interesting is the Tosfot Yom Tov, who says that it was called Lishkat HaEitz in contrast to another Lishka in the Mikdash. It was called Lishkat HaEven that was used in the preparation of the Parah Adumah, where they only used things that made out of stone in there. And that's why it was called the Lishka HaEitz over here. And maybe even it was the Lishka where the Kohen Gadol stayed for his 7 days before Yom Kippurim. And then it would be even more in the contrast, which is also compared to the 7 days before the Parah Adumah. There he separated himself to Lishkat HaEven. Before Yom Kippurim, he separated himself to Lishkat HaEitz as opposed to Lishkat HaEven. Lishkat HaGola, the Lishkat HaGola Shamaita Bor, Kavua, there was either cistern or some sort of water collection, and it had some sort of pulley system or bucket that was there. That's where they drew sweet water for the Azara to be used in the Azara. It's interesting for a number of reasons. First of all, it sounds very similar to the Kior, and the Ravya conflates the two and says that it was the Kior, and it was the mechanism for raising and lowering the Kior. Although again, it's very difficult because these lishkot don't seem to be close to where the area of the kior was, even if you put them on the southern side rather than the northern side. Others suggest that it was simply a pulley mechanism or bucket to take water up. That's also interesting only because we knew there was water flowing from Ein Etam in an aqueduct system into the Beit HaMikdash and then flowing through the Amma throughout the Mikdash and out the other side. So whether that water wasn't as clean or as good quality as the water that was kept in the cisterns, or whether this was additional water that they used, or maybe even this was the system was there before they put the aqueduct in. Before they had the aqueduct, they had to have water there. This was the water source in the Mikdash. After they put the aqueduct in, they didn't need this water source. But that's Mishkat HaGola. Some say it's because it was used by the Olei Regalim from the Gola to drink water and to have water when they came to the Mikdash. Others say it was donated or provided by them because they were Olei from far away and they needed water in the Mikdash. The other one is Mishkat HaGazit. Gazit means that which is cut or quarried. Shamaita Sanhedrin Gedola Shel Yisrael. That was where the Supreme Court of Klal Yisrael sat. Yushevet Vedana Et HaKohanim. And there they used to adjudicate cases with regards to the Kohanim. If you remember, the Sanhedrin sat in a Chatzi Egul, sat in a half circle in three rows. The Lishkat HaGazit is half in Kodesh, half in Chol. The Sanhedrin itself sat in the half that was Chol. And then the litigants, whoever the Bali Din were before them, stood in the area that was Kodesh. They adjudicated matters of Kohanim on a regular basis because the Kohanim were always present there, but they were Supreme Court for everything. Not just for Kohanim, for Levim as well as issues that arose from other courts or final decisions that had to be made. By the Sanhedrin, they were the final stop, the Sanhedrin HaGedolah. But Kohen Shnim Tzabo Psol, if a Kohen was found to be disqualified from the Kuna, Lovesh Shkorim, Umitatev Shkorim, he puts on black clothes, wraps himself in black, he would say Olechlo, and he exits despondent and upset about the fact that he no longer can serve as a Kohen. Shalonim Tzabo Psol, and a Kohen that was found to have no problems with them, Lovesh Levanim, Umitatev Levanim, he dresses in white, wraps himself in white, Nichnas, Umishamesh, Mechav HaKohanim, and then he goes in and joins the rest of the Kohanim that are doing Avoda in the Mikdash. Yom Tov HaYosim. He used to make a day of celebration. Shnonim Zapsul B'Sarosh Shal Aron HaKohen. But they didn't find anything wrong. When a Kohen was approved or given permission to serve as a Kohen and that he was a qualified and vetted Kohen, they used to make a party or celebration for that, that they didn't find anything wrong with the descendants of Aron. V'kach HaYu Omrim. And this is the refrain that they used to say in this celebration. Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu. Blessed be the one whose place it is, meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He should be blessed. Shalonim Tzapsul B'Zarosh Shel Aron. That they didn't find any problem, blemish, in the descendants of Aron. Baruch Hu Shebachar Baron Ubanav Lamod L'Sharet Lifnei Hashem V'Beit Kodshei HaKodeshim. And blessed be the one who chose Aron and his descendants to be the ones that service before Hashem in the Mikdash. And whether it's Mikdash or literally Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim, the holiest place, or just Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim, representative of the jobs of the Kohen, and the Kohenim servicing to the central point where the Ashrat HaShechinah was, but that is to end off on a nice note, and you can see that this last piece might not have been a part of the Mishnah as the Shita Mikubetzet notes in Otud Aleph, but nevertheless, it was there to end off on a nice note in the Mishnayot. This is not the end of Seder Kodeshim, but here in the Gemara, it is the end of Seder Kodeshim, and so it's also a nice way to end Seder Kodeshim, whereby you're now giving a bracha to the service in the Mikdash, to of course Baruch Zashrat HaShpinah that's there, and also pining for the return of that Avoda in the Mikdash. With that, we end Masechet Midot and Seder Kodeshim, Hadron Alach Kol Azara, Aslik Alach Masechet Midot, and Hadron Alach Seder Kodeshim.